Hey everyone, Sitaram, and welcome back to the Cutlass. Today my guest is Dr. Visham Bimal, a primary care physician and cultural activist in Trinidad and Tobago. Now, I know Visham as a fellow language enthusiast because he is also an independent researcher on the Caribbean Hindustani language, and he additionally specializes in Trinidad Bhojpuri. I connected with Visham a couple of years ago when I reached out to him to ask him about the state of Hindi, Caribbean Hindustani, and Trinidad Bhojpuri in the region. And ever since then, he and I have had a continuing dialogue about the language and the culture and how to promote it. He does really great work on his Facebook group, Caribbean Hindustani, as well as the affiliated YouTube channel. I am going to include the links in my bio. I'm very excited to announce that Visham and I will be collaborating on the Cutlass in a joint partnership between the Cutlass and Caribbean Hindustani to continue teaching the language, Trinidad Bhojpuri, Caribbean Hindustani, for all of you listeners. Visham is very well versed at teaching language, and as you all know, I am fluent in Bhojpuri and Hindi as well, so I will be acting as the student. So looking forward to sharing that with all of you. Stay tuned and enjoy this episode. Until next time. So Visham, can you give me a little bit of background about yourself and your passion for Caribbean Hindustani and Trinidad Bhojpuri?
Right. So yes, I'm not really versed in linguistics. I'm just a linguist enthusiast. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because I had to retrace what is Trinidad Bhojpuri. Yes, it's a language on the way out. Only seniors or those in their winter years could speak it. But you see, what they remember may not be as complete as what somebody maybe 50 years ago could remember that no longer alive. So why? Yes, because I learned 5 languages and vacillate among them depending on what I need to do. Why language? Well, yes, because of Trinidad Bhojpuri. Mm-hmm. Why other languages? Because I had to, in search of that language, look through texts as well as interview people in languages other than English, because people fail to realize that descendants of the diaspora don't only exist in Trinidad, they exist in not only other English speaking erstwhile colonies, but they also exist in French and Dutch speaking colonies. Mm-hmm. So that's why other languages, but my profession is I'm a medical doctor. This mm-hmm. is just additional interest of mine.
Mm-hmm. So you are a medical doctor who's very interested in Trinidad Bhojpuri and language. I am studying engineering. I'm an engineering student and interested in Trinidad Bhojpuri. Now, another similarity that we have is the connection with the language to our grandparents and older generations in our family, and I've heard you talk before in interviews about your grandparents. Where was that connection to Trinidad Bhojpuri when you were a kid?
All right, the first language of my grandparents, not Aji and Aja, Nani and Nana, but yeah, Aji and Aja. Aja went to Naprima College, so their education was a little bit more. Aji was probably up to standard 5, but my Nani and Nana had no interaction or minimal at all if it were with the education system in Trinidad, right? That's one factor I noticed even in my interviews, is that the less you went ahead in education, the more you retained the language, which is something we'll look at further on, because that's one of the points I think you had. So yeah, they spoke Bhojpuri on a daily basis. The fact is that that was their first language, but they could vacillate between, they were bilingual, or we could say more multilingual. I'll give you reasons for that after when we explore different aspects of Hindustani in the Caribbean. But at least bilingual. So they would switch from Trinidad English Creole, because they didn't speak standard English, to Trinidad Bhojpuri. And then there was the in-betweens where they would speak Trinidad English Creole and use Hindustani expressions, right? Yes, and the thing is I don't encounter it anymore. I'll just look at a sentence where my daddy's Pua, she lived in Felicity, that's daddy's paternal aunt. She was like, "Easy now, boy, then thief and them shooting the khaki wheel and thing." clash Trinidad English Creole with some elements of Trinidad Bhojpuri grammar. And it was Dr. Peggy Mohan, that's the person whose work I basically looked at, because that's the only documentation of Trinidad Bhojpuri. She had said that actually Trinidad English Creole, if you look at the Indian community, actually sticks to the true sense of what is Creole. And if you would look at within the East-West corridor, which is on the way to Port of Spain, that's an important point to remember. And then, yes, most of my life up to the age of 17 was spent with my nana and nanny. Yeah, most of my waking life, because parents used to pick us up and then we would go to bed after that when they come from work. So, yes, things like Bahasa, which is Buffalipso, I would have grown up with. Gai Charawe, means to carry the cattle to herd. Adauri, or a kukurwa hatia se, that's an expression to tell a dog to move from here. Certain things that I would know, people in my generation wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. Right? Not only in Trinidad Bhojpuri, but even old expressions in Patwa, which Aja used to use, Anani and Nana. Lingua Franca, we have to understand, was necessarily in Hindustani. It was also in French Creole, right? Mm-hmm. And because of that, growing up in it after my grandmother died, I would have entered the education system at age 5. So I would vacillate in between those worlds of speaking Hindustani, which is Trinidad Bhojpuri, and speaking English. So when I went to the university level, I did standard Hindi, and I found Peggy's thesis by Dr. Peggy Mohan, and then started really looking into the language of Trinidad Bhojpuri, visiting Suriname, the Netherlands, Guadeloupe. I did MBBS, but I also did Hindi as well, right? Hindi up to advanced, and that was through my commission. So there are Hindi classes in Trinidad and Tobago that people could access. It's just that few people access it up to significant level to become conversant or at least be proficient in that language particularly. And then, I remember during that time I would have encountered Peggy's thesis, Trinidad Bhojpuri Morphological Study, and then pursued it from that point. But the interviews with the old people and that idea only started happening in 2010. That's after I started working in Southwest Regional Authority, which covers where my Aja and Aji used to live, and a very relatively rural community. So that the speech was still there among my patients from Pinal and Rockwood and DB and Sipari. And so I started conducting interviews then because these speakers were more accessible to me. Through Peggy's thesis, I was able to kind of get a semblance of speaking the language, as well as also I had access to her audio content. Mm-hmm. So then I was a bit, I would say, conversant in the language so that at least I could conduct interviews with these old individuals who still speak it. And there are some, I even spoke to one on the phone today because I had to clear up the expression Hirail Betwa, which means literally lost son, but is how what the Christians use for prodigal son, because we now translate in that. Mm-hmm. In Caribbean Hindustani, we'll put in a plug for Caribbean Hindustani at some point because I forgot to mention it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you were a kid growing up with your grandparents, were you actively learning the language from them? Were you interested in the language, or were you conversing with them in English?
It was bits and pieces of expressions. I wouldn't say I would have spoken to them in the language. Yeah, bits and pieces of expressions. And well, the Trinidad Bhojpuri, the Trinidad English Creole they spoke was laced with a lot of expressions and words, vocabulary-wise. Mm-hmm. I would have understood from that. It's only when I encountered Peggy's thesis and gained a knowledge of the Hindi language, then I was able to reconstruct it now to actually speak. Mm-hmm. Speak it.
And kind of jumping off your point about how there were more East Indian people who could speak the language the more distance they were from education, for example. And I know that's particularly true with my family, where my family's from Karani and they were largely poor. And my great-grandfather, my Parnana, he was actually a Hindustani teacher and had a school and everything in the village. And my Parnani, she was able to converse in Bhojpuri relatively easily. And my own grandmother, she and her older siblings, they knew it as well. But I think maybe because of that tradition of them being poorer and they were Hindu and they also did not go to school a lot, to an advanced level, there was a lot of Hindi and Hindustani that was passed down, and that me and my cousins know that maybe a lot of younger Indo-Caribbean youth don't know. And so that's why I always had an interest in it, because I grew up hearing these words. And I'm interested at some point later in the future when we have other conversations to kind of start exchanging a lot of those words and seeing where the commonality is. But I never really thought about it. And like my grandmother, when she'd call me beta, or when I would hear a lot of phrases being used on your house, I never really thought about it. I never second guessed it. And it was only after that kind of older generation in my family passed away that I started learning the language, and I was able to learn Hindi, which, as you mentioned, is a lot more accessible in terms of the books and literature available to learn. So I learned standard Hindi, and I still have a teacher to this day. But I've always really wanted to become well-versed in Bhojpuri, and while I can understand it when I go to speak, that is not what comes out. But I'm really interested to know when that kind of change happened with you, where you became so passionate about teaching it and promoting it in Trinidad. Because like you mentioned, you by trade are a medical doctor. And I imagine that a lot of medical doctors don't exactly have all the free time in the world. So why is it that this is so important to you?
Right. So basically, when I find out where my passion was, and then from there, how I moved on to thinking about documenting it, and then making it available, because yeah, most of the stuff in Hindustani is Kariboli, which is not modern standard Hindi, which essentially is like Bhojpuri, Trinidad Bhojpuri, and modern standard Hindi is like Portuguese and Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Because a Spanish speaker could understand a Portuguese speaker and vice versa, even though they're speaking a different language, but the language has moved that far from each other yet for it to be completely mutually unintelligible, like Arabic versus Aramaic. And so Trinidad Bhojpuri speaker to some extent could understand a Hindi speaker, but not respond in that language. That's a difficult question to answer. You actually asked me a question that I've been asking myself repeatedly, because I can't understand why I have this passion in this. After 17, my grandmother died. So yes, that could be a starting point. But I knew my grandmother, who was still alive when I was at secondary school, which is Hillsview College. And I remember, so I learned to read and write Hindi after Komanendra. And that would be from my mamu, my mommy's biggest brother, who was a pundit in the family, who carried on that trade. That was their profession, that mommy's family's profession. So yeah, my brother, myself, and my cousin learned to read and write Hindi when I was just finished Komanendra. So it was around age 11. I could read and write Hindi. I could read and write Hindi, not necessarily understand it, which was quite interesting, because most people learn Hindi only reach that level and stop. They do pursue it at a level where they could now express themselves in it. So when I was in Hillsview College, I could have, by Form 1, I could read and write Hindi, right? Hillsview College also is a Presbyterian school. So you understand, have to understand the link of being in Hillsview College versus being maybe in Presentation College, or maybe being in QRC or a junior sec or whatever it might be. Because what I remember is that a lot of us were of Indian origin in school. A lot of us were very empowered in our culture and being Indian. And a lot of us would express that in our daily conversation. That had a lot to do with now me basically having a more interest in the language to go further. I remember we used to celebrate Indian Arrival Day at Hillsview College. It was a main event. Also Diwali, which is a Christian school. You wouldn't get that in most Christian, at least to the extent. We had a Hillsview College task site as well. We had a Stilpan ensemble as well as a task site. I remember one time, because I was involved in a library, that the library had artifacts for Indian Arrival that they wanted to put on display. Now, some of that came from my nanny's house, because I carried the jata, I remember that. Daddy had to, that was quite heavy, and there were certain artifacts within using the kitchen that I would have brought that she would use, like simta and stuff. And I remember I offered to the librarian that time, because I could read and write Hindi, that I could write these words in Devanagari, as well as we could write the English romanized script. It would add a little bit of panache or extra to the fact that it's written in Devanagari. So yes, I was heavily involved in Indian culture and in utilizing Hindi language at that point. Shortly after I finished CXC, I learned Hindi from my own looking at stuff and getting books. Actually, I remember, I got a Christmas book to teach yourself Hindi. No, this was a DK series, so I probably learned Hindi from that, which was quite good, I found. Then I started UE. At UE, I did Hindi formally. But most of the languages I learn, I do it on my own because the medium in learning is very important and how quickly and how well you grasp the language. But I still went to university to at least get some sort of certification, right? At that time, you could do any language at the Language Learning Center, UE, Center for Language Learning, for free once you were a full-time student. I did Hindi up to advanced. Until I reached clinical years, I didn't have time. So at that point, I knew Hindi. At that point, I could speak Hindi. I remember I was involved at UE in MEDS. MEDS is a movement and encouragement of Dharmic services, which is essentially the Hindu society of the Faculty of Medical Sciences, University of West Indies. And I must tell you this, is that a lot of these guys, again, was like they were like in Hillsview College because we were very empowered in who we were, right? We all had people who spoke Hindi from Malaysia, I believe, and other places. Some students actually were the children of Indian NRIs who were also there. But there was this level of us enjoying Bollywood songs and me breaking into conversation ever so often in Hindi that was quite unique for our group. Not everybody could speak Hindi in our group. There were a few of us. And some I must mention Dr. Rakesh Golan. He's an orthopedic because he might probably watch this or listen to this afterward. He spoke Hindi. He's Trinidadian. You seldom find a Trinidad person at university who could speak Hindi. I mean, if you speak Hindi, you'd think, well, hey, where are you from? You're not from Trinidad. We used to do the meds play, and I remember one time I had stood in for, no, I was a Rakshas. There was Rakshas 1 and Rakshas 2. And I had to say in one of it, where it was a Children of the Ocean play. And I had to say in that play, I was the demon telling demon 1, telling demon 2, Rakshas. What's that? Because this is when whatever was arising out of the children was coming out. So we had to indicate that, hey, something's happening there. So all I had to say was, what's that? And the other demon had to say, well, I don't know. But I said, Ritti Puvo kya hai? And then my friend was like, say mujhe pata nahi. And do that expression. When Dr. Ahmed Pariag, well, sure we can be looking at this, saw that, he was like, guys, we're keeping that. Because when we did it, it was as if, yes, this was a Hindi play, but it was Trinidadian speaking Hindi. And I think after that, I said, Ritti Puvo kya hai? Subtitle, what is that? And then afterwards, I think I had to stand in for somebody else in that play. This was year one medical school. I think I was Sage Dhritarashtra. And he was scolding Indra. And I remember he had to say, never. And well, for my Hindi, I just added, Kadapini. And then Shant Hoja. And stuff and expressions that I knew. So I added that into the play. And the director at that point said, Visham, this is your part. The person who you're standing in for wouldn't be doing this anymore. You be doing this. So I got two opportunities there to introduce Hindi into the play from the Hindi I knew. But it looked so Bollywood-like that it was very attractive to everybody. And on the day of the play, it actually came off really well, it seems. It got chuckles. People were talking about it after. The fact is that a Trinidadian who speaks Hindi at a play, at the level of a play, cannot do it in or convince people that they are Hindi speaker. So the fact that I was able to say it like that also brought this to the audience because I was speaking in Trini English all the time and just broke out there. It was like a Bollywood scene. After that, in meds, every single year, everything started coming out slowly and slowly more in Hindi. So that was a huge impact, the fact that I was able to do that. Up to today, if you look at the plays from the UE Hindu Society as well as MEDS, there is some level of Hindi in it. And that was because of that moment, because prior to that, there wasn't that much Hindi at all. And that's where, I guess, what fostered even speaking Hindi at a university level, that we had people who we could speak with on a daily basis. And it was also me asking something like, Are, tum kahan ja rahe ho? Asking a question like that to my friend who could respond, Are, main cafeteria ja raha hu yaar. Mere saath, kya aap mere saath aana chahte ho? And saying things like that among our friends who couldn't speak and those who were not of Indian origin, where we could vacillate in a space where we could communicate and say things and be empowered in who we were, that not the average person who was of our same cohort. When I say cohort, other students of Indian origin who were Trinidadian couldn't do it. And that was something that was quite empowering, as well as also now having the opportunity to interact with others who were native Hindi speakers.
coming out of university from that experience is probably where I would have gotten that. But also remember, this is the time I met Peggy's thesis. So this was the time now where I could delve into while interacting in Hindi on a relatively regular basis, I could have now even delved into Bhojpuri. Mm. So that is how it came there. And because I had access to Peggy Mohan's thesis, now I could even carry that passion into something I wished. Because I remember once, my grandfather had Alzheimer's. He had to go to the... I said my nanny died when I was 17, and he died shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometime after, because it was really sad of his interaction. She was his only interaction on a day-to-day basis. Everybody went to work. When I was a child, it was just me and the two of them. And then my brother came along. It was me, my brother, and the two of them. We were the youngest grandchildren. And where I actually remembered when we had to carry him to the psychiatrist, who was Dr. Hari Maharaj, by the way. A lot of Trinidadians know who I'm speaking about. And mommy had come back. I wasn't there any consultation. And mommy had come back and she was like, yeah, Dr. Maharaj spoke to him in Hindustani. I didn't understand what he was asking him. And he spoke back in Hindustani. So I was like, Mom, but why can't we? I always had this thought, and I don't know what it was. Maybe because before I went to school, primary school, I saw myself as a particular identity, and I thought that even speaking this language was part of that identity. And I would always lament on the fact that, well, my mom can't speak it, my dad can't speak it, none of our other cousins could speak. I'm the only one from this generation who would reflect back to certain experiences, because I was so close to my nanny that my other cousins, they don't have that. They don't have that. There were moments, you see, nannies protect me. I was a little child and I get buffed a lot. But for some reason, whenever I was not comfortable in the situation, I'd run back and just hug up and hide in her bosom for some reason. That was a common thing. So I don't know. There was a special relationship there. So that was one reason why I probably had the interest. And so let me share one thing. I was in Suriname once, and I thought as a teenager, I always lamented because my grandparents I would have lost by the time I was 21. My nana wasn't there anymore. Nanny was gone by the time I was 17. But I always had this dream that one day I would be sitting with them speaking in the language they spoke on a regular basis. I remember I went to Suriname, and I was in Suriname. The Ula folk don't speak English. Yeah, they speak Dutch. Some, like my nanny, used to speak Sanantongo, which is like our Trinidad school, and Hindustani, which is Suriname. And I did an interview with that old guy. I still have it. All that's part of Caribbean Hindustani research. And then his son had to leave, and he's like, Visham, sit with dad, because I have to do stuff now. And just entertain him a little bit until the ride comes. But this man spoke no English. My Dutch wasn't that great. So I sat with him, waiting on Chris Ramkilawan to come pick me back up for 2 hours, just speaking in Hindustani. And I expressed it to him. I was like, no, I go back into my mind. I was like, well, I probably got my wish, not with my nana, nani, but at least a speaker of the language where I have to interact with you only in Hindustani. This is a dream come true for me. Mm-hmm. So again, that is the story of, yeah, reflecting back to my grandparents, what they spoke. And for some reason, which I haven't answered yet, always thinking that, well, yeah, this language is also a part of the same identity. The fact that my phenotype looks like I'm from South Asia, my parlance daily speaks of words like Jokha, Tulha, Tasa, and I say these words, tells of my identity. So I think that, yeah, and teaching this language and going ahead now to try to document and share the knowledge with others from the diaspora, to kind of feel that sense of empowerment and identity. Yeah, that's it. That I feel. And I think to some extent, at least Indo-Trinidadians have that. But yeah, there's a gap. There's a gap. There's a gap with understanding language and feeling more empowered in that.
Just to really go back to when you were mentioning the parts in Hindi, just to translate for people who don't know, when you were saying "Idhar Dekho," look there, "Mujhe Malum," I don't know. The part where you're saying "Mere Saath Jana Chahte Ho," do you want to go with me? Just for people who don't know the language who are listening. I always think it's interesting how much of an intersection that we have in terms of our experiences. My grandmother died when I was 13, my other grandmother when I was 15, and I was close to them, particularly my nanny, my maternal grandmother. And in wanting to think about all of the conversations that we never had, I was looking through all the things that I had of his, and they were all music CDs, Hindi music. It was all Bollywood. I knew that she was constantly watching the movies and the television shows, and I learned a lot of Hindi from little words that she would use. And for me, I also had this fantasy of one day being able to reconnect and speak any language. And through learning Hindi now, it's, you said how it was nice to be able to have like utility with the language at college, where it wasn't just that you knew the language, you could speak with somebody else who's Indo-Trinidadian, someone who spoke with a Trinidadian accent, somebody who also knew Hindi, and how much of a link and bond that was between you two. And sometimes we talk about language and we make it this very professional thing where you need books and you have to take classes and have a degree, when really you learn so much just from interacting with other people and being able to use the language, right?
Yeah.
And you talked about the reaction to you speaking in Hindi. And I've found that we are very much in the minority. The vast majority of Indo-Trinidadians, Indo-Guyanese people do not speak the language. But every time, every person that I come across, they have this very highly esteemed view of the language. If I'm speaking it or I tell somebody that I speak it, no one ever thinks that it's wrong or it's bad, or that they're always very interested, right? So even if we don't have it in this spoken form, there's very much a high view placed on Hindi, Bhojpuri, Hindustani as a language. So I was just kind of interested in how the reaction has been from your family and all of these efforts that you have had trying to promote the language, since you are the only one who knows it. And I find it interesting that your brother, like you mentioned, grew up with you as well, with your grandparents, but is obviously younger, and yet he did not learn the language. You had something that was different. So what has that reaction been like?
All right, so again, I share it from experiences. Mm-hmm. The fact that, and this comes to one of the other questions you'd have to ask about, I think the first time we spoke, when you reached out to me, this was the question you asked, like, what's the fate of Bhojpuri, what's the fate of Hindi? So, and I always say this, mom's probably accustomed to this by now. Mommy's family is Brahmin. At some level, well, most of the members of their family would have learned to read and write Hindi, just like myself. Didn't go progress beyond that. My Aji did go to Hindi class as well. Daddy's family is Ahir. But again, it doesn't, my Aji did at least learn Hindi, to read and write Hindi. Nani could speak Bhojpuri. She was illiterate in both Hindustani as well as English. Aji, however, was literate in English and as well as Hindustani, Hindi. My Nana was literate completely in Hindustani, but not in English. So a lot of times, yes, most of the people would only associate those who speak the language to be of a particular age. So mommy said once, when I was pursuing Hindi at university, I don't think my parents would have expected me to do medicine. That was the next thing. Mommy didn't expect that. I just decided to do it, and I told them, and I got through. Because that's another passion I had. So mommy was like, well, why are you pursuing, once you can read and write, that's all you need to know. So her view tells of the view of what most Indian people think about learning Hindi as not a vehicle of upward social mobility. So my family is just one example. Mom's comment actually brought that out. But my first interview about Kawa Hakkani Ke Khisa, you would have heard the audio. So she is a relative. She is my mom's cousin's mother-in-law. My cousin, I mentioned names here because they love it. It is that I mentioned their names. Shakti Babwa. She got married to a friend of mine, Anas Makum, who was demon number two. Yeah, this conversation. But they got married. At their wedding, I met this old woman who I never knew of. Remember, this is extended family. And anytime I see an old lady, because if you look at the old lady who's now 100-something, who I recently posted at the interview, she sells in the Bay Market. Anybody who looks as if they are particularly didn't speak language strikes an interest in me. So I went up to her that wedding day. And, well, there wasn't a wedding day. It was probably the Himachiko. And I was like, tum jane batte aave Hindustani? She's like, haan, hum khub jane batte aave, beta. And then we started speaking. Now the reaction, because we're among family members, this is a family event. The reaction was, I think it was a stop, because one is that, yes, this would have occurred, but this would have occurred in a different era, a time when their parents would have lived. But this was one person from a younger generation who was talking to an older person. And I remember my mom's cousin, this is Shakti's aunt, this is Shakti's mom's sister, her mousy, had pulled me aside to the back, and she's like, where you learn that language from? And I was like, I can't give you an answer. I know Hindi, but I could still at least link Hindi to it. Because I think I was quite impressed, because the fact that I was a younger person, nobody in that gathering older than me could have done what I just did. Well, after that, I got a contact, and I did the Kowaka Nike Kisa interview, which was my very first interview in Trinidad, by the way, because he realized I didn't speak any in that. We just spoke in English and asked the related story. So those are two. So there is this bittersweet thing, in the sense that a lot of people take pride in the Hindi language, Hindustani, but yet still there's this separation of it being part, it should be part of their knowledge base. It should be part of what they should be educated in. So that there's this fascination, this fact that I could speak Hindi, and it's like, oh yes, he speaks Hindi, that's a good quality. But yet still, those in the Eastern community don't lobby, there's no fervor with regard to pushing for teaching of the language and it becoming part of our everyday, right? But that's not their fault. I mean, that's the fault of a colonial system. A colonial system that tells you, and that's why Trinidad Bhojpuri died. By the way, a lot of people who listen might not agree, but just like Bhojpuri is on the way out, slowly and slowly Suriname is, just by two generations, and I could attest to that. If you have time, I could talk to you as to why. Uti Marhe agrees, Peggy Mohan agrees, and the fact that there's separation in speaking Hindi, Hindustani in India by class also is an early sign that it's on the way out, right? So, I mean, Trinidad Bhojpuri is no different. Patwa is no different. Just like I could speak Trini English Creole, which is a separate language from English, it tells of my education. It tells of a part of me I might be ashamed of. Yeah. When we talk about pejorative and affectionate, that actually hooks the point. Because if I go and I speak at mommy at home and say, Mom, I would like some food, that is not, I mean, that's out of place. She would be like, so what you're trying to tell me I'm uneducated? That would be in between the lines. I have to speak in that context, and it's more comfortable and familiar to speak Trinidad English Creole. But if I am among my colleagues and I'm speaking about medical education and formal knowledge, I can't speak Trinidad English Creole again, because now it comes off not so much familiarity, but the pejorativeness of it. So that is where Trinidad Bhojpuri is and Hindi is, unfortunately, in the population. But again, that's because we are being defined within a context of identity from a colonial system. Mm-hmm. And any colonial system, even the Dutch, as I just mentioned, would do it. I remember one quick experience I want to share is that people, we have reached a point in Trinidad where language is lost. And we lament why? In Suriname, they're on the point of where it's still spoken, but it's on the way out, let's say in the next 20 years. I asked one person when I remember going there, so when you went to school, she's probably my age or maybe 10 years older than me. When you went to school, primary and secondary, did you speak Hindustani? And where did you speak Hindustani? And what did you speak at school? And why did you choose to speak that at school? And she admitted that, yes, knowing Hindustani and interacting in Hindustani did hinder them from learning quickly in Dutch. So we also have to take into consideration the fact that one is the superiority inferiority association, and two is the fact that not being associated with it actually helps you learn better in the other language that the education is taking place in. So that's another factor, and that's something that maybe you and I might know, because I mean we vacillate between English Creole and standard English, so that it's not difficult for us to adapt our education system in English, whereas our grandparents, because mommy doesn't speak, and this is the result of it at the end, doesn't speak Hindi, that's what they had to grapple with, in other words. And it was part of their exclusion of the education system, the fact that now they had to learn English before they were educated. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think within our culture, we value education and high achievement so much. And I think it's pretty much proven that when you raise children multilingually, it takes them a little bit longer to become well-versed in both. They do eventually get there, but the process is slower than if you're just doing one language, and that's perceived as being bad, or your kid is not performing, your kid is not bright. It's really sad to hear about the state of Surinami in Suriname in terms of it losing that utility. But you touched on a couple of things, again, that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Before we continue going with your work, you mentioned things about colonialism and indentured and stuff. Can we go back in time? How did Bojpuri come to Trinidad and Guyana and Suriname? What were the languages brought with our indentured ancestors?
And we can cover another point. Why it is even in diaspora now, that even though it might be mutually intelligible, because of this whole history of how recruitment evolved over time, why it is Fiji Bat is different from Tsunami, Trinidad Bojpuri is different, and why it is still similar, right? Because that's also part of my research. Raj and I mentioned Raj Singh as well. He's my colleague at Caribbean Hindustani. We are at a point where we're trying to standardize this thing to teach people because there's so much variance, right? It's not like learning English. I go, because there are three ways to say it in Hindustani. Or more. So it's a difficult thing. Yes. So we all know history. We all know slavery was abolished. We all know that after the abolition of slavery, there was had to reinvent some way to still carry on this thing where they get cheap labor. And they call it indentureship, but it was really that hugely different. I remember reading Peggy's thesis also from Thinker that before Indians were, or India was explored as one of those places where they could source that labor because it was part of the British colony. Who was a British colony, there were also people like the Chinese.
Yeah.
She had mentioned another few. There were a few experiments that didn't really work out. And then finally they looked towards India. And just to mention this, is I want to mention the extent of the countries because people who realize our identity as Indo-Trinidadians also exist, not as Trinidadian attached to the word, but as person of Indian origin, where this language that we speak of is also very important to these people. Well, we know Guyana, obviously, right? There's Suriname.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that when you see a Dutchman say something like, well, I remember when I looked at the interviews, hoe gaat het met jou? Met mij gaat het goed. And when I saw people speaking like this, it throws you back a little bit in Suriname because they don't speak English, they speak Dutch. And to hear somebody looking like you, you're looking across the room and you like, they look in Trini and then you go up and speak to them and hear something different. It's quite a draw job. I mean, it's a moment that takes you back to be confused just for about 10 seconds. Then orient yourselves. South Africa, Mauritius, Fiji, Reunion, Belize, Jamaica, and even in the French Antilles, so Guadeloupe and Martinique. Yeah, when people see Indian culture expressed out of deep nationals of these countries in Trinidad, they're quite amazed. So these were the countries that were recipients of these indentured laborers. When the British started indentureship, it was in the early 1930s. Mauritius was the first country to receive indentured laborers, right? Mauritius, then it was Trinidad and Guyana. The capital of the British was Calcutta, right? Today, Kolkata, because that's where they conquered first. So that part of that Bengali Sultanate was Jharkhand. Jharkhand was part of Bihar back. And that Ranchi Plateau is where they started recruiting indentured laborers initially. They spoke Southerni Bhojpuri, which is a southern vernacular of the Bhojpuri language, as well as Peggy has pointed out that there also are a lot of people who spoke tribal languages, which is unrelated to Bhojpuri Hindi. Hindustani. But people fail to realize that during this period, the British didn't really conquer most of India yet. They just had that part of India. Mm-hmm. So the early recruitments were from this general area. And then the British started proceeding towards Delhi. They conquered most of Bihar. So that then slowly from that southern Ranchi Plateau or Chota Nagpur, they started going into northwestern parts of Bihar. So places like Basti, Faizabad is more UP, Gorakhpur, and places like these, where they started getting recruits. And then as time passed on, the British progressed into Uttar Pradesh because they were going towards Delhi. And then they started getting recruits later on in the latter part of the 1800s. They started getting people from Uttar Pradesh. So you would see places like, well, I mentioned Faizabad, then you had Ayodhya. The important part of these places I'm mentioning is that initially it was the Bhojpuri belt, or most of the speakers spoke the Bhojpuri style of Hindustani. And then as they spilled over into Uttar Pradesh, it started people speaking Awadhi, right? Awadhi and Bhojpuri are separate languages. They come from different Prakrits, or spoken forms of Sanskrit. But these two languages really form the basis of what Caribbean Hindustani is. Caribbean Hindustani being the Hindustani spoken in Trinidad, Guyana, Fiji, to some extent, Jamaica. So the majority came from there. In the earlier parts, there were people also from Madras, so that Dravidian languages like Tamil mostly, Telugu, and then Malayalam also did contribute, but to a lesser extent. That wasn't the critical mass, though. We just mentioned the critical mass was Bhojpuri. It's important to note that this was before the partition of India. The term Hindustani meant any language spoken in northern India. Because if you ask any old person in Trinidad, hum jane bati awe Hindustani, right? Or Indian. So Hindustani meant, at that point, now Hindustani means Hindi as a standard, at that point, any of the vernaculars which I just, or languages that I would have mentioned, the South Indians are called Madrasi specifically. Note that the earlier recruitment took place in the Bhojpuri belt. So earlier recipients of indentured laborers would be Mauritius, Trinidad, and Guyana. So they would have mostly Bhojpuri. Indentureship started later in Fiji. Latest in Fiji, later in Suriname. So they got a greater stock of Awadhi speakers as well. Now, note that a forming of a language starts with the majority of who initially came. So by the time indentured laborer ship, indentureship started in Fiji and Suriname, a lot of Awadhi would have been there. Whereas in Trinidad, not so much, because the British didn't reach that far yet in conquering. So just from my experience, one time Chris Ramkilawan said, "Are ya uta dekhis?" And I was like, I completely didn't understand. I was like, "Dekhis ta? Dekhis? Na samjhe. Ee sabda na samjhe." So he was like, "Are doctor sab, to u dekhal." So then I understood, because that's what my nani used to say. So slowly I realized that Sanami Hindustani in their conjugation has half Bhojpuri, half Awadhi. And we in Trinidad have mostly Bhojpuri, and Guyana, mostly Bhojpuri. I can't really speak on behalf of Mauritians and Fijians, but I know based on reading, that's my own personal experience, I explain. Because remember, I speak the language, so I would speak to Suriname person, I'd speak to... so far, I really didn't get much Guyanese people speaking the language. And I'd speak to Trinidadian, old speakers in Trinidad, Bhojpuri. So that's from my own personal experience. But I've listened to some Fiji Bat, and when I listened to it, there's an old guy named Mr. Charu. He's a Kabir Pant Mahant in Trinidad. So he reads a lot of Kabir Sakis, which have been translated into Awadhi. Definitely when he speaks, I could hear a difference from what I know from my grandparents used to speak. So I could tell now sometimes, okay, this is more Awadhi and less Bhojpuri. But he could speak that because he's well-versed in the Kabir Sakis. So that, because he's Kabir Pant. That's why. Mind you, Kabir originally composed this in Baranasi Boli, which is not Awadhi, but actually a Western vernacular of Bhojpuri. Yeah. Right? That's why there's that kind of mutual intelligibility there. So the majority, the critical mass initially came from the Bhojpuri speaking area, and it still remained that, and it spilled over into the Awadhi speaking areas, right? So like, for instance, if you say in Suriname, "I was there yesterday," it'll be "Kalhiya hum raha." Kalhiya hum raha. But my nani would say "Kalhiya hum rehli." So there is definitely a difference. Only after interacting with them often, then I started realizing the forms. And it's kind of like a Jamaican speaking to a Trini. Initially, you wouldn't understand him. But then slowly, as you speak to them, you kind of figure it out that this means that or that means that. And you'd figure it out. But when I started looking at it, and even looking at Muti's thesis, I realized that, well, this is Awadhi, and this is not Awadhi, and this is not what I grew up with. So I noticed that subtle difference. But I could speak to that Bhojpuri to a person from Suriname, and they'd understand me, and vice versa, right? It is mutually intelligible, I could tell you that. So just to go over the part of the history is that a lot of them, it was a heterogeneous state of linguistics when they came, because not everybody spoke the same vernacular slash language, but because they had to interact on a daily basis, and this is why Peggy's new book now looks at this whole concept of the Caribbean life and language evolution, eventually it became called Plantation Hindustani. And because the critical mass was Bhojpuri, it was based in that language, right? Now, I just want to explain something here as to the variants. So in Trinidad Bhojpuri, there are three ways to express I go, I'm going. So hum jai is one. Hum jai la is the second one. And there's another one, hum jai ha. Hum jai ha. So that was clear variant that Peggy identified in her thesis. I only hear certain forms when I speak to people now because it represents that those variants were homogenized into one plantation Hindustani. Mm-hmm. That plantation Hindustani had also interaction with French Creole as well as English as well as Dutch. Because when I do interviews with old people from Suriname, they after 20 would just say Dutch number in Dutch. Like in Trinidad Bhojpuri, old people would say the number in English. Because I remember it's in Peggy's thesis as also in Gumber's thesis, is that just like we say 80 in French for 80, which is 420, that's how we count in Trinidad Bhojpuri after 20. So they would say 2 20 are 3, right? So that's 2 20s and 3 43. And I've heard it. Now Peggy records it, but a lot of what she records, I may not necessarily hear because the language now at the point where it's on the way out, so that the form that will be remembered would be less so, and the people would be less fluent as compared to her speakers. So the whole issue I'm bringing to the point, it's mutually intelligible. It's based in the same Bhojpuri, all of them, all the countries I mentioned, because I could speak with I recently spoke with a old guy from Fiji, and it was comfortable. I asked him questions, he responded. He asked me some questions, I responded. So that it means that historically, where they mostly came from also is reflected in the language with the variance of the fact that the point of indentureship and the areas of recruitment would also influence what form of plantation Hindustani would develop. And then my nanny would use expressions like tebelwake behind, or tebelwake niche, tebelwake tare, below the table, kitchenwake behind, tebelwake upar. And then they use words in Nekeri Hindustani, that's also from English. I remember doing an interview once and the old lady say, ego dimas. And I didn't know this word, dimas. And then after, I remember talking to Peggy Mohananch and I was like, she said, well, actually, yes, they use the word dimas to mean a week or Sunday. I know etwar, right? So it means that comes from dimash in French. And then one recording from Peggy's thesis, I remember she had mentioned, well, I remember this expression even from one of my interviews, din bhar, khetwa me, no not khetwa, sorry, mule me, yeah, kaam karat rahli. I used to work all day in the factory. Mule is a Bhojpuri word that comes from mula in French, right? So there is that all essence of the uniqueness of each country's Hindustani, where they would now imbibe the language that they would, languages or expressions from where they evolved, to now form parts of theirs. So there are certain words I'd probably use or expressions that they might not necessarily know. But remember in Suriname, they was originally British. So where my nanny would say ketari ke khet, which is the sugarcane field, they say cane ke khet. They use the word cane, which is an English word, in Suriname, where we still use the word ketari, which actually I recently discovered still exists in India. So it's all based in Bhojpuri, yes. Bhojpuri is a language separate from Hindi, like mutually intelligible to some extent, but it's like Portuguese and Spanish. And then there is these smatterings of other words and expressions that exist. When people, remember, go back to the first expression I used, ear easy na boy, them thief and them shooting the kake wheel and thing. So ear easy. E is actually, people think it might be a corrupted English word, but E means it in Bhojpuri. Ka ke wheel, possessive in Hindustani, the wheels of the car. And then my nanny used to say, well, bring it by here, bring it here for me. Bring it here for me. I remember once I said here because I was home. That time I was a good nanny a lot. And mommy was home that day and I stayed home. She kept me home. I didn't go by my nanny. And rain was falling. And I remember distinctly this. Mommy, I was like, oh good, look how much water it have here. And mommy was like, hey, the word is here. It's not here. And at that point, I remember growing up thinking, well, okay, so here is a corrupted form of here. But Bhojpuri, here is yaha. So people think that the here, all people use, is a broken form of here and represents your uneducativeness. But actually, here and hua is Bhojpuri for here and there, which is not the same in Hindi. It's yaha and waha. So there's a lot of Trinidad English Creole that is imbibed Hindustani words, and people think it's corrupted words. That's an important point. And then one way we say in Trinidad English Creole, I can't, is I don't know how to. That comes from Hindustani, because a lot of times the old people, and I recently heard it used in one of the interviews. So she say, what was the expression? Now, jawan larkiyan, aaj kal ke larkiyan, na jaane dhoye, na jaane pakawe, na jaane ghar ke kaam kare. Right? So you might translate that they don't know how to, as English Creole speakers, we understand that. But when I have to transcribe, is they can't. They can't wash, they can't cook, they can't do housework. So that expression we use in English Creole to mean I can't, which is they don't know how to, actually comes from Hindustan.
Mm-hmm. I always feel like the most kind of obvious examples of the Hindustani influence on Trinidadian English is like when people say kamna, na from the verb in Hindustani, auna, but instead it becomes kamna.
No, we're not sure as the roots, but yes, the same exact usage. So that in Hindi you would learn, you could add na to soften the command. So when you say, even if you can say, come na bit na. So the same na, I think, I still have to establish if it does come from, because remember the average Trini uses it. Oh yeah, one thing I want to mention is that, so you can easily form a verb if you don't know it in Hindustani from an English verb, right? So see, to see is the word, so see is the root. You add am to the end. So siyam karila, I see, right? Kukam karila, I cook. So, and I know it, I heard it. If you listen to the last interview I posted, which is the old one, she had said something, I remember the lady who I brought with her, she speaks Hindi, she was my Hindi teacher actually at UE, when I did CLL course, and she had used the Hindi version, and the lady repeated it, understanding it, but it means that, again, being a speaker of Trini English Creole, you could throw it in if you forget, because there's a rule to form it. You take the verb root in English Creole and you add am and kari.
Mm-hmm.
Siam kari, to see. Yeah.
And yeah, so I kind of also wanted to, in the vein of the history of the language, as you mentioned, there were so many languages brought. What emerged as the lingua franca was Bhojpuri. I know a lot of the children on the sugarcane estates were raised by elderly women, elderly Indian women who would teach them the language and all that. And the process of language death, if you want to talk about that, kind of started around the era of nation building, right? When they had to start going to school and the sacrifices made of, in order to learn English, we have to forget this language. And there were a lot of things that contributed to it. Can you talk about the process of language death?
I still have to gauge the issue of the Canadian missionaries. Because at that point, I can't assess if there was any issue of significant language loss. I know that the Canadian missionaries, Presbyterianism, they actually went to India, and it was the Fort William College. I spoke to Prof. Samaru, and he was like, yeah, the missionaries were actually associated with that. And Fort William College marks the birth of Hindi and its institution. Prior to that, what is modern standard Hindi was not the standard, right? It was Avadhi, Braj, which our grandparents understood because they told it in stories. But specifically in 1950s marks a big period in a lot of things, even redefining what is Hindu. Because remember that shortly after the independence movement. And the independence movement in India did reach out to the diaspora. And as well, it represented now Hindi being the standard, because the independence movements, the independence of India and the partition of India from Pakistan represent these terms of usage of now, which we weren't clear about. Because if I asked my nana, he wouldn't We can't explain it. What's the difference between Hindi and Urdu? Because Hindi and Urdu represents staying apart identity language for the sake of creating now a new identity, political and religious, on both sides of the fence. A lot of people think Urdu and Hindi is, oh, they are separate languages. No, I could have, I do interpretation. I speak Hindi, but I do interpretation for the Chandigarh police service as well as the immigration for Urdu speakers, because it's the same language, honestly. It's just I have to choose. If I have to ask him what your nationality is, I'll have to just, Hindi, it's, aapki rashtriyata kya hai? But if I have to ask him, aapki kaumiyat kya hai? So you change the derivative of it. But mind you, most of the people I have to interview might not be that educated. So I remember asking some people who I had to interview, I guess they worked on a ship, and I was like, आपकी राष्ट्रीयता क्या है? He's like, क्या? आपकी राष्ट्रीयता क्या है? क्या? And then I was like, nationality क्या है आप? And then they responded, so I use English word. That tells a lot. That tells a lot of the state of the Hindi language. The fact that if you're not educated in it, one, you don't use words like राष्ट्रीयता, which you teach in Hindi class, and then certain things they teach in a Hindi class, not it doesn't really get you prepared for the world of conversational Hindi, because conversational Hindi, as you and I know, interacting with speakers, has a lot of English in it. Mm-hmm. And even it comes naturally in speaking, right? So I spoke, just before we had an interview, I spoke to a Bhojpuri speaker, and I came to another revelation. And I'd like to share.
Or in India?
In Trinidad. This is Mr. Abracadabra. Most of the people listen to you from Trinidad will know Mr. Abracadabra. Mr. Abracadabra was the magician who would come to schools. When I was in Warrenville Presbyterian, and in college, he did visit schools and do magic shows. He speaks fluent in Hindi. He's 91. And he's also fluent in Trinidad Bhojpuri, right? Mm-hmm. Now, he is the authority or persons who, or one of the persons who is still alive, who I could call up on the phone and be like, you know, I hear this all the time. What does this mean? Or what does that mean? Because he speaks the language, right? And the thing is that, just like you said, when you exist in identity, you exist so passively. You don't exist so actively. So I'm a person of Indian origin on a daily basis because I eat roti, I eat chokha, I eat baigan chokha, I eat dal puri, and we use it just like that. But we don't step out of the box and record it. So it's lost over time because we just exist in it passively. And he is like that too, because sometimes I'll ask him and he doesn't know, but two of us would figure it out because I know sufficient Hindi and he would be like, you know more Hindi than me, you know. I might be correct in your thing, but honestly, you know more Hindi than me. So I come up laughing. I was like, yeah, but at the end of the day, sitting past these gaps that you need to fill. So if you look at the interview I recently posted, which is an old interview I just reposted, and the lady said, I'm char go mar gai. No, char go bilas ho gai. Char go bilas ho gai. So she had 10 children. She wants to say 4 died. Now, I, through my interviews, and this is not in Pegasus, so I've learned a lot by doing the interviews because what she didn't record there, she might have in the recordings, but it's not made. I have to learn it in context. So after doing multiple interviews, they say, well, bilas ho gaye. Uta bilas ho gaye. So after I slowly realized that is, well, to die. Now, there's this expression, bhog bilas. Means bhog means food. Bilas means pleasures of the world. Enjoy pleasures of the world. Bilas is a Hindi word. So I thought it was related. I thought bilas was the same bilas ho gaye. So I spoke to Mr. Abracadabra today and I was like, you know this expression, bilas ho gaye? He's like, yeah, it means mar gaye. I was like, yeah, but what is the Hindi equivalent? Because I just kind of quit life from a find this word. He's like, it's vilash. So vilash is the opposite of lash. Lash means a corpse. Vilash is outside the corpse. So it means that life has left the corpse. So everything outside, even the soul itself, is not vilash. It's apart from the corpse. It's just like we're using desh videsh. Desh is my country. Videsh is everything outside my country. Right? Gyan vigyan. Again, same concept. So today was the day I actually had a revelation.
V and V.
Well, the Vik from Sanskrit is a prefix that means apart from what it actually precedes. So, Gyan is regular everyday knowledge. Vigyan is knowledge of outside this. Vigyan is knowledge of Brahman. Right? Desh is where I live here. Vidish is, well, everything apart from my country, which is foreign. Right? So, that's how you get that. That whole concept. But Lash is body. Vilash is outside the body or without the body, which is what the soul is. So Sha in Hindi becomes Sa in Bhojpuri. So Vilash becomes Vilas. And Va becomes Ba in Bhojpuri. It becomes Bilas. So Bilas Ho Gail or Bilas Bhai Gail means Well, it came outside the body, so it died, right? No, I have to share this experience with you because I call his nephew after because it's COVID and I haven't met him since this lockdown. And he's 91. I'm not sure if he'll still be around next week when I show up space of time. So I call his nephew for the sake of saying, well, let's do 2 week interviews because I had a 2 hour conversation with him today. And I so lament that I could not have recorded it because things he said, I couldn't stop to write it down. So I organize now to say that once a week, for two hours at least, I will do a Zoom with him and record it. Because I need to refer back to those because the things he mentioned sometimes, it's the answers to questions I've been asking all the time. So I call his nephew and I ask his nephew is half Indian, half Trinidadian. So his dad is from India, his mom is, that's his mamu. Musaba Karabar is his mamu, his mom's brother. So I ask him, he's Dr. Manocha. I'll mention him because he'll probably tag him when I share his link. He speaks Hindi because a lot of his education happened in India. So I was like, Dr. Manocha, do you know the expression? So I said Hindi, Vilash Hona. He was like, no, that sounds weird to me. I said, but you know the expression Swargvas Hona. He's like, yes. Or Guzar Jana. He's like, yes. So I say, did you know? And at this conversation we had, I told him, he's like, my God, you know, Visham, this is really precious to do with my mamu. And you have to do it regularly because you identify things that's so unique to us, belongs to our pre-partition India that not even an Indian person can understand. Mm-hmm. And the issue is, and I think to bring home the point here, because I know we just over the hour, is that people look towards the High Commission. People look towards present-day Indians because they think to themselves that, well, this is where the source is. They are from my motherland, so they might know. But we fail to realize that that motherland has evolved to the day on its own, separate from us, that we have so much remnants of the past that they even look for us or look towards us as the authority now. And I have encountered it over and over again. Why? Because if I take a Bhojpuri song, I'm thinking about one now, Sone ke karawa Raja Ramchandra maya se araj maya se araj karau, maya hamata jaiba madhuban ke sital kai de rakhiya ho. That's a Drupadi song Ashni sang over. It's not a popular one, but if people hear it, it'll be very, very catchy to the ear. I remember carrying that song to some Hindi speakers and they couldn't understand a word of it. There are a lot of songs I have that slowly and slowly over time I come to now understand because like, so if you have an expression that uta admi bilas ho gail, no Hindi speaker knows what it means. Now I know what it means and I only had that revelation. So Caribbean Hindustani slowly and slowly kind of putting it together. Because a lot has been lost and there are not much people alive to kind of clarify that. The other thing I wanted to say is that now Caribbean Hindustani myself has become a unique entity. Why? Because this unique entity, you know the Lomax recording, Alan Lomax? So one of his recordings called the Grinding Song. And the caption in the CD says, well, this is such an old song that we couldn't get anybody to translate it. It's in an archaic language. I listened to this song and I was like, but yeah, this isn't a grinding song. This is a Bidisya song. She's lamenting of the fact that her beloved went abroad. So even though they would have sang this, it would be a song that they would remember, a song that was popular. It wasn't necessarily a song that described what the action was. And right now with the Mandir up the road, I'm doing the Ram Vivaha, where even the song of mounting the tree on the sister's head for Mati Kaur, when they're going for Mati Kaur. When you listen to the words actually tell of a woman carrying a clay pot, carrying water on her head. It has nothing to do with the ceremony. And it's quite interesting how we lost because over time, these people would have sang these songs because it's just the song they knew and the song they would pass on, not necessarily in the time they were supposed to sing it. It's like me singing a calypso at a point because I remember the calypso. So, I mean, yeah, what we have is quite unique. And then the thing is that nobody is doing research on it. And I lament that. And that's why I started Caribbean Hindustani to start doing these things where I document the content.
And we can go for a little bit longer if you have time. Now, I wanted to know, I've had this experience where I'll say certain things and my Hindi teacher who lives in India has no idea what I'm talking about. And when she speaks in Hindi, she uses a lot of English words as well, normally, but But yeah, we do have this very particular kind of dialect. And in everything I've read about parts of the reason why the language was lowest, there was the element of it not being a part of the national identity around independence, the Indian culture not being expressed publicly. But there's also the fact that Bhojpuri was seen as Tuti Hindi, right? Broken Hindi. And that contributed to a certain amount of shame that it was a lower class, lower caste dialect of Hindustani. And as much as Bollywood, for example, has helped us retain this cultural identity when it started getting introduced to Indo-Caribbean people, it kind of reinforced that idea that what we had was this like broken, corrupt form of Hindi when, as you've mentioned, that's not the case. We have our own very unique tradition. And in everything I read about the Helen Myers book, Music of Hindi Trinidad, everything I read is that our linguistic tradition is very old and it's maintained in a certain sense of like chutney music and stuff like that in Trinidad, whereas it doesn't exist in that form anymore in Uttar Pradesh. But what I wanted to know was, where is the state of Hindustani and Bhojpuri now? And you and I have talked about collaborating to teach the language and doing more and more to make it accessible. What is the kind of reception that you're seeing now? Are people interested in it? Have you been in contact with schools with the mission to introduce it in the primary schools? I've talked to some of my cousins who are going to Hindi schools in Trinidad, and they say that they're learning Hindi now. It's a relatively new thing. So what is currently the state of it? Are people trying to learn it? Do you see it ever being revitalized, being maintained in chutney music, perhaps?
Right. Two things. Well, I mean, you mentioned a lot, so a lot crossed my mind. So I'll just try to remember it in order.
Yeah.
Because it brings out a very important point. We spoke about the history of the language. Now you have to look about the history of administration of the language, because that's our issue as well. Spanish has been taught at school. It has a syllabus. The person who introduced Hindi at university level and allowed a Hindi chair as selected by the commission is Dr. Sylvia Modi Kulal Singh. She was the director of the Center for Language Learning when I learned Hindi, but she is also the main author of the book I learned Spanish from secondary school, which is Viva, right? Not sure if they use that book still. But when she found out that they were introducing Spanish in school, she was like, well, there are no textbooks. So she wrote the textbooks and she recently released them. In the curriculum of the primary schools, it says that they should offer some sort of education in the heritage languages of our country. And they mention Spanish, they mention French. There's no mention of Antillean Creole, which is Patronal Patois. They mention Hindi, they mention Yoruba, and I think they mention Arabic. I'm not sure they mention Urdu. So in other words, that it is there in legislation, but who is responsible for following up at that point? It's not the legislation, it's not the government, it's our people. And that's, I think, the sticking point here. Go back to my mom's conversation with me about just knowing a-a-e-e-ga-ga-ga-ga, and I'm finished. You and I know we're not finished. You just started. So if our people, my issue is, one of the biggest hindrances I have is, unfortunately, my own people. In other words, we have institutions that could lobby. I wouldn't call any names, but I'm not sure if they know how to lobby, if they don't know how the system does work. If we look at French and Spanish at school, there's a curriculum officer with at least a master's in the language that sits in the Ministry of Education. There's the Caribbean Examination Council that has an examination board of people who set exams and also set what are the reference for the information. There are school teachers who write books and textbooks in the language. I give an example, not a school teacher, but this is a person who did Spanish linguistics as relevant to Trans-Tobago. There are certain entities and components that have to be established. In no form or fashion will the administration replicate what is there exists for French and what exists for Spanish for Hindi. They wouldn't. And lobbying, advocacy needs to take. Right now, teaching of Hindi is not standardized in Trinidad and Tobago. Every Hindi teacher uses different material. The only person that went to establish something that could be used as a standard was Kamala Ramlakhan Singh and her three books, which was, I remember, used at the university level for those who begin Hindi. Her books, as far as I know, is not advocated for to be used as a standard. another friend of mine also wrote books, because the Mahasabha has a syllabus for Hindi up to standard 5, only the Mahasabha. So in other words, that document as a syllabus is only used in Mahasabha schools. But the people who teach Hindi are not well oriented. No workshops are done for them. And if we're seriously thinking about teaching Hindi at a primary and secondary school, we have to seriously think about people who are qualified to fill positions that are equivalent for French and Spanish. I don't think we anywhere there. So from an institutional standpoint, no. I basically started learning Hindi at home. And you mentioned the Kutia. My aunt used to talk about the Kutia. Or she used to talk about the Siwala. That's where they used to learn. By the way, Siwala is a Bhojpuri word for Shivalai, right? It means the mandir. So that's where it did start. It still exists at that level. But there's no institutionalization, no esprit de corps, no aggregativeness, no coming together of a community to advocate for it. High Commission has classes. High Commission has classes, and I currently teach a class. There's in the Agra is the Hindi certificate, which comes from Agra University, which could be done through correspondence currently. Mm-hmm. They actually give something. They have modules that I use to cover content for students who I teach Hindi right now to prepare them for those exams. And if you write the exam and you get a certificate, then you could carry that anywhere in the world and put it on your CV and say, look, I have this proficiency in Hindi, right? But nobody has tied those links together. In other words, we have established accredited exams, but yet still people do in Hindi, but they do go towards writing an accredited exam. Only one school does. And this is through the efforts of the Hindi Foundation of Trans-Tobago. I'm also a member. It still exists. Girls at Holy Faith Convent, Couva, could optionally do Hindi and write it at Cambridge level, O level. So they have a Cambridge O level, right? Now there's a bigger problem here. There's not just us. There's not us, it's Hindi itself. The government of France, this is where I learned French, has invested in promoting French as an element of French culture in its consulates and countries where consulates exist. So there is actually a standard system. There's a textbook. They're recording for the textbook, and you follow that system. If you follow that system, then you actually are training yourself to work in a French environment. So you can go all the way up to the top and now apply for a job in France, right? Or at least apply for tuition or education in a particular field where you train yourself to now work in France. That's not the situation in India, because the average person who gets a job doesn't necessarily have to know Hindi. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there's no aspiration towards more earning by learning the Hindi language. So that's one. So the government of India itself does not really invest in promoting Hindi as a element of Indian culture outside of India. It's not organized. So again, not only here, but the institutions that we will look forward to do it, not necessarily so. My own take on it is that the content for teaching Hindi itself does not prepare you for a world of spoken Hindi, or a world where Hindi exists, or domains in where Hindi exists. No student who learns Hindi from any Hindi class could listen to a Bollywood song and understand it, could listen to a chutney and understand it, could read the verses of the Ramcharitmanas and understand it. So it's not geared towards our end goals. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing I find from my point. Now, I told you I learned Hindi, I learned French, I learned Dutch for my own, wherever I would find some material I think that was significant enough that would make me conversant in the language. The issue with India and Indian nationalism is that they would only use content outside, from within India. And that content from within India, sorry to say, pushes a Shuddh Hindi agenda. Once you push a Shuddh Hindi agenda, then it does not really match with where Hindi exists in Bollywood, and the Mandir, wherever else. So that the people you would train in that Hindi language now still wouldn't be able to do what they set out to do. And I want to push in the plug for where I learned Hindi here. It's like a Gurukul. So there is this, was he Australian? He passed away three, four years ago. I never met him. He wrote the R.S. McGregor Hindi-English Dictionary. So I have it here because I use it today. And I have it, and you can see how battered it is. Because I bought one. Mm-hmm. I bought two. I also have a PDF copy now, but look at the state of this book. It's in cards. And his name is here, R.S. McGregor, right? Mm-hmm. He was one person who did Hindi was his profession, right? His protege was Rupert Snell. He wrote Teach Yourself Hindi.
Yeah, I have that book.
I actually know Rupert Snell, and we shared emails together.
Mm-hmm.
And his, I asked him once, and he was like, what do you want me to do, really? And I was like, well, promote. He's like, honestly, I should show the email, but it's a very discouraging email. And he was a protege of R.S. McGregor, right? And how I figured that out is that is my resource on standard for Hindi. So R.S. McGregor wrote this dictionary that was published through Oxford, and he also wrote Outline of Hindi Grammar, which covers the Hindi grammar in completeness. And then I think Rupert Snell utilized that stuff and created his books. Because if you would look at McGregor's content and Snell's content, it's basically him, you could see reading this stuff and now putting it in the perspective, because you could see the ideas of McGregor in Snell's work. So that is essentially a Gurukul system, because you have the person who started it, the person who passed it on, and how it moves from there. These are white men. These are not Indians. So there's an issue and a problem to utilize, because any country who would use something would obviously use things, Trinidad is an exception, by the way, would use things that is produced by their own national, because it kind of instills that pride. Unfortunately, what comes out of India itself, I would find, does not really put a person of Indian origin in a position or to realize their goals of becoming fluent in the language, fluent meaning being able to speak and being able to understand, right? The reason why these books work, I think, is that they actually cover a vocabulary that exists in the language every day, in Bollywood, in whatever. So if you listen to the song, O Mere Zahar Jabi, Tu Hai Something Hasi, but Zahar Jabi is a word that you would not find in any book, English, Hindi book published out of India, because it comes from Zohara Jabi. So Zohara is the Arabic word for Venus. Jabi is Chehra from Arabic. So it's actually Arabic expression in the Hindi. But then again, you have to look at the content. And this is where, sorry to say, a Hindu national agenda purges a language and rips it into two standards, one called Urdu and one called Hindi.
Mm-hmm.
So because internationally Hindi has its issues about what is available, it also creates a problem for us. The other thing is, I think that what we need to create, what Caribbean Hindi Society is trying to do, is a Hindi with a vocabulary that is more resonant with an identity that we now recognize. Nimantaran.
Mm-hmm.
So any person who at least maybe a little bit older than me would know that in any wedding invitation is a bit of rice dipped in hardy that's tipped it. And this is not longer existent, but some would still have it for tradition. But as a child, I remember seeing it. And they would call that neuta, right? Neuta is the Bhojpuri word for invitation. But you never learn that word, neuta is a Hindustani word, in Hindi class. They teach you nimantaran, which comes from Sanskrit. Another word which exists, and I could tell you because, again, my reference is R.S. McGregor's dictionary, is jata. Jata occurs in Hindi, but they call it, in Bhojpuri and Hindi, but they call it chakki. It's chalti chakki, which is a kabir das thing. Another word that exists in that dictionary is what my nani used to say, are kukurwa hathiya se. Kukurwa hathiya se. Kukur, which is dog. Kutta also exists in that book. So in other words, then, it means that we need to create a product that is a modern standard Hindi version of what reflects who we are, which does not exist at this point. And slowly, I guess, in Caribbean Hindustani, it would be developed, because then you create a course in Hindi that now prepares a person of a diaspora to not only understand Bollywood, to not only understand what the bhajan says in the mandir, but also even understand themselves in their own Trini English Creole. Yeah, we do have a product that where the ends and the means. Yeah, it does not flow. So Hindi and Hindustani currently does not flow.
And so what are you hoping for in terms of language revitalization? What are your goals?
My goals are to not reinvent the wheel. The High Commission of India have sent people to India, also has Hindi classes. But those who speak this Hindi or understand some don't build on each other. So I need to link that network. We need to link a network for Hindi teachers. We need to link a network for Hindi students, so that we create extracurricular activity that exists in the Hindi language. That's one. Currently, there's no information that teaches Trinidad Bhojpuri or Caribbean Hindustani. So the other issue regarding that is now to create content so that slowly and slowly, you know, at least people would be more sensitive to the language. Mm-hmm. As the revival, I can't see. I was a child who couldn't speak the language, but now I'm an adult who can, mm-hmm. to some extent. So for, at least for me, I have achieved the goal of a wish to have, be able to be conversant in the language. Rabindranath Tagore said, those who plant trees, or at least the wise ones, are the ones who know they would never sit in its shade. If this language revives, I don't know. I remember, well, he's no longer with us. I remember I actually met with the Mahasabha president, general secretary, former, who died recently. And I had a discussion because I said, Bal Vikas is not necessarily Hindi. Bal Vikas is in mostly Bhojpuri, Awadhi. Mm-hmm. So why don't we develop a course that these students, which is now extracurricular, would now prepare them to even understand what they sing, and now it even gets them more empowered to learn the language. And he was like, Doc, why you want to revive an already dead language?
Mm-hmm.
So it means that I, Vishan Bimal, Caribbean Hindustani, mm-hmm. cannot create that need that is my need in the population. A lot of people have similar interests and admire me for what I do. All I could do is document the language and leave it there for somebody or some institution to carry on that tradition. If I would have left at least anything that documents the language my grandmother speaks, my nanny used to speak, then I would have achieved one of the goals I was sent on this earth for. After that, I can't say.
I look forward to working with the Cutlass in collaboration with Caribbean Hindustani. So hopefully we could bring some enlightenment on a language that needs to be decoded so that we are empowered in our identity.